perspective. We got the cool, we got the muscle, and you know we effing rule. We are the Geek Grills, we are the Geek Grills, alright. We got the know-how, we got control, we got the knowledge, and we tell you how it rolls. We are the Geek Grills, we are the Geek Grills, alright. We are the Geek Grills, we are the Geek Grills, tonight.
Hell yeah is right. Hello. Welcome to episode 166 of Geek Grills Podcast. My name is September, and I am joined by my co-hosts, Linda and Ray.
Hi there.
Now, folks, our podcast is supported primarily by our patrons. Please go today to patreon.com/grills. We could really use your help with the pandemic and everything. I understand. People have been unemployed, but we have lost some patrons, and we could really use your support to keep this show going. Today's topic is our quarterly book club, and we will be talking about The Bicycle Diaries by David Byrne. Yes, that David Byrne of Talking Heads fame. So, what have you been up to this geeky week? Linda?
Let's see. I am still working on my Cats of the Year blanket. The borders are long and tedious. Not full of terrors, but tedious. And I took a little poll on Facebook because I was curious to determine the most iconic D&D monster after dragons. And by a very large margin, like, I didn't do the percentages, but like, it had like 16 votes and everything else had maybe 5, was the Beholder. So, of course, I made one.
He's so peppy, I'm gonna die!
Like, and you
I
do.
Love it. You know, I almost said Beholder when I saw the thread, and but so many people had, I was like, yeah, I'll just like somebody else's. She doesn't need to hear that. But for some reason, it didn't occur to me that you would be making one. I should know by now. That's what you're after.
Yeah, so, you know, to, alas, poor Xanathar, I knew him well. but yeah, he turned out really cute, and I think I may have found another item to make for my, whenever we go back to MomoCon, or I'll have some beholders to show off and see if people want to give them homes. They're you know,
I think
they don't
that'll
eat much.
Totally work out. I think there was input in your thread. Like, even people who don't play D&D know what it is.
Yeah.
Now I kind of want to see the Mind Flayer.
I had a thought for the Mind Flayer, actually.
That sounds hard.
It would be a chibi version.
Yeah.
So it'd be a little chibi Mind Flayer with blah, blah, blah.
Things, yeah.
Well, and you did the demo dog, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like I should have a line of, you know, it should be terrifying, but it's cute. crochet things.
I'll put your magic with the crochet hook, so it's just like, boom!
I've written magic wands on my crochet hooks for a reason.
I still need to finish that icon for you.
Take your time. It's fine. we had another virtual gods game this past Saturday. This time with combat. Virtual combat. So we were kind of alpha testing the virtual combat rules. And because my character is a performer and they didn't quite know how that was going to work, but also my character is like a paramount performer. And when you perform in gods, you give bonuses. Like, you basically give out like boons and such. I could do a performance every round and I was kind of broken. Like, I was like, here, you get a power strike and you get a power strike and you get a power strike and everyone gets a power strike. Here, have a power strike. It have some more, you know, have some more hit points. How you doing? And I was just like, I was broken in a good way for the PCs, but also I was like, I feel like I'm cheating.
You're just a bard. That's fine.
I was just a bard doing the bard thing. So probably if we do another kind of like virtual combat game, they may lessen that a little bit, because I was like, I feel really broken.
It happens. And, you have to balance.
Yeah, I was like, every round? Okay.
Every round.
Every round. You guys get a performance and you get something. So that was basically what I've been up to.
So the game went well?
Yes, the game went real well. We basically like had, we were split up into four different groups, and we had to like get through this weird other space and solve puzzles and also fight against monsters that popped up. And then when we all got back together, we had all the puzzle pieces that we got from the separate groups in to get out of the other space.
Was this like time wise? Was this after the last game, or did they do a whole like?
It's supposed to be like wherever you were, like you were ripped out of your body for like out of time. Okay. So it doesn't affect anything in the world because we got out.
I was just curious about that.
Yeah. So you blinked. You were in there for a minute, and then when you blinked again, you were back running, kiting the big monster, because I know that was your downtime. You're going to be so tired.
I know. If we ever have a face-to-face game again.
So what have you been up to, Ray?
So on a just a silly whim, as I go off camera for a second, I had an idea because I kept seeing this adorable frog hoodie on my Facebook. I was like, that would look really cute on a particular character who is from My Hero Academia, who is also like a frog girl. So I drew that, and then I started like a whole little mini series of those characters in hoodies. This one is my favorite. I'm not sure if he's going to show up. There we go. No light.
Turn it slightly. Yeah, aha! There we go.
Yeah, light is my nemesis. That one's my favorite because he's adorable in a woobie, and I like woobies. But then one of my friends contacted me, and she's like, hey, I really like the frog girl. Can you make me one? And I'm like, okay, cool. I have so many spare parts. What do you want? Illustration board? Canvas? She's like, you pick. So I'm like, okay. So here's the illustration board.
Ooh.
Oh,
cute.
There we go.
I love it.
And then I have canvas inked. Let's try this again. Aha!
There you go.
Okay. It's her full big thing. So that was like kind of the closest to the original. And I'm going to give painting that a shot because I got really frustrated with my markers on the illustration board. But I'm using materials. I have so many materials from before lockdown to go through still, so doing that. We finished Umbrella Academy season 2 this weekend.
Me too.
That was so cool. I really like it. I like it better than the first one. I want to rewatch the first one again because I'm like, wow, it keeps getting better.
Yeah, I definitely like the last the wrap up better than the first season, but yeah.
The other thing I watched was a documentary on YouTube, and I think it's been out for like a couple months now. It's called The Fandom, but it's basically about the history of furry fandom and like how that has come to be and how they started conventions and all of that. And it's actually like really interesting. I was kind of like, I'm like, no, this is actually really cool. And because I watched that, it made me think of like a bunch of old webcomics I used to be into, like Sabrina Online, Kevin and Kel, and Sluggy Freelance. So I went on an archive hunt to reread through some of those and like, where did I leave off? Oh yeah, it was after this storyline, so let's go back through here. And
oh yeah, you recommended me one because there was a character that loves Transformers.
Sabrina Online, yes. Yes. The main character, it loves Transformers to the point where like later I don't remember if it's so much in the start, but like where I've picked up, like the little Transformers basically have their own mini comic within the comic.
Oh my gosh.
With commentary on the movies and stuff. And like that particular comic has apparently like been out and posted since the late 90s. So I'm still going through archives on that one. I think I'm in 2010 now. So it's gonna be a bit. That was it.
It's good to not run out of things. Mm-hmm. So let me see. I went hiking again at Rocky Face, which I still can't make it to the summit, but
such pretty pictures. Love those pictures.
Yeah, I didn't get a bunch at the top like I usually do, but when I get to the top, when you see those, I love just looking out over so much land. Like, it makes you feel very accomplished. And it's like a granite dome at the top, so I like to stop. And there is another part where we stop that has like big granite face you can just stand at, and I like to do some yoga there, just a few stretches, a few poses, like out standing on a rock in the open air. And I started to, and I folded over and my diaphragm cramped and I dropped my water bottle and it almost fell off the mountain. Yeah.
No.
We went hiking like a few hours, like an hour after we had an earthquake here in North Carolina. Why not? Why not? You know, what's the worst gonna happen? But it was a lovely hike. I made more masks. My sister, I made her a bunch. She's very indecisive, so I think I kind of ended up making all the masks because she couldn't decide. But her boyfriend wants a camouflage one, which is good because I have camo fabric, and I'm like, nobody really wants that. Linda, I did make your Hufflepuff one, but I had a brain fart and cut the elastic to the, I used the elastic for the kid's size. So I have concern it'd be like yanking on your ears too small. So I have fabric cut. I'll just make another one.
Okay.
But I'm working on it. And I got fabric delivered in my mailbox last night. And I just got a text because they wanted to know how many I could get out of the fabric. So I'll be making 20 masks with the new optical fabric. Yay. I harvested a cantaloupe.
Ooh.
And it was so delicious and wonderful. It was so good. I cut it up. Texted my son, because, you know, teenagers don't come out of their rooms. And he's like, do you want some of this? And I sent him a picture. And he came out, and just as soon as he came out of his room, he's like, that smells good. You could smell it in the whole house.
Oh, wow.
Oh, so delicious. And I've got a couple other big ones coming. So that was lovely. I had some, when I picked it, Saturday, and then Sunday I went on the hike and came back and had cold cantaloupe. That was a really great reward. What else? So yeah, I also finished Umbrella Academy season 2, finished Devilman Crybaby, which, if you like nice tidy Disney endings, you're not gonna like this very much. My husband was kind of like put out by I got all kind of weepy and like, oh no, doesn't leave you in a good place. But I really, really liked that show. I did watch that Sailor Moon movie.
Oh, how'd you like it?
I was, I hated it less than I hated. No,
I'll accept that.
Yeah. I was really annoyed at the opening, like, all of a sudden, like, Jupiter's, like cooking, cleaning master. And I'm like, ew, what are they're doing this shit again? But as I got into it, I really appreciated it, the story, having more story to it and getting more background in an efficient way. And so, although I didn't like the animation as much as Crystal.
It is the 90s animation.
Yeah, that is, I want to say 97 is when that movie came out.
And so I watched the dub this time.
Okay, yeah, that is different. And you also survived the terrible 90s computer animation sequence.
Yeah.
Oh, God, it's so bad. It does not
But I kind of like the kitsch of that and being, like, with my, like, skewed view of Sailor Moon to begin with, like, it just belonged there. That was perfectly fine. Like, my expectations, it met my expectations.
Okay.
Now, the other thing I did this week that I am super psyched about is I used my wood burning, my new pyrography kit. Yee! I completed the Ake Willow coaster.
It's so pretty!
I tried a new technique that I just thought was a good idea. Like, Rob loves the idea of unicorn spit. I don't know if you've seen this stuff. It's like colored stain you can mix and do all these great effects with, but it's super expensive. And I'm like, why couldn't you just use acrylic to stain things? It has pigment. And I was like, oh, let's try that. And then I went and I looked it up, and there are a couple different methods. One looks stupid. Like, this lady has baby wipes and puts acrylic paint on it and, like, rubs it in. And then, you know, oh, well, there's a little lint coming off, but you can just get out of there. I'm like, what are you doing? But then the other method was just 50-50 water, put it on and wipe it off, like, just like stain, and it worked. My husband would burn a mercury symbol on a coaster, not for the sailor. He's like... He works with computers. He sees his communication and stuff. And I did the Ake Willow logo. This is my freehand version. I have not done... I think it'll be much tidier when I do use the carbon paper. But the staining worked fabulously.
So pretty. I love it.
And then I put poly on it, but I used spray. And I am going to get some brush-on poly because for these coasters, anything wood-burned... To get it flat, because of all the indentations, it was spraying. It was not the best way to do that. And I put cork on the back. I have leftover cork contact paper that I lined all my shelves with some years ago. Yay for stash.
Yes.
See? Craft stash. I will use it eventually.
Now is the time.
Now is the time.
Now is the time. So that's about that. So on to our topic of discussion for today, book club, David Byrne, The Bicycle Diaries. Now, this, I know neither of the girls finished it. That's fine. And I understand many reasons why, other than time, because it does kind of, it's really cerebral in a lot of ways. It's,
I mean, I enjoyed it, like, what I got through. It's very...
But it's all his, like, observations and insights as someone who habitually rides a bicycle and travels all over the world. So his views and he kind of goes on tangents and it's little stories. And one of the... What occurred to me today when I was, like, browsing through it again was like, oh my God. It's like No Reservations. That's what it reminds me of. It is about bicycling the same way No Reservations was a food show.
Yeah.
Like his observations.
I can totally see that. And it struck me very much like a travel blog. And I was okay with that because, you know, that's the point of reading things like that, is to get their insight and to get their, you know, their thought processes. And it wasn't quite stream of consciousness, but it was, you know, it was things that he remembered. And I found it, you know, very interesting.
Yeah, I loved, like, it's categorized as a travel book. And I think if you were like, oh, I am a cyclist and I travel, and you picked it up as to use as some sort of guide, you are going to be sorely disappointed, unless you're trying to retrace his steps or something, which isn't really possible, because it is, like, that's where it reminded me of No Reservations, too. Like, I mean, he's planning this show, and then he meets these people, and there's little stories about some dive bar with belly dancers, and
I did get to that point.
The political aspects of like trying to plan a festival in Turkey, and Turkey was trying to get into the EU, and they're trying to convince the government, because the local mafia thinks it's competition for their club, and so they jump up to the government like, but it'll help you get into the EU because you're culturally serving a different demographic. And he dives into infrastructure of towns and how highways have carved up towns. And although their purpose was, and I know this has kind of become a crusade for him, the purpose was to get from place to place. But in that process, a lot of times ended up bypassing towns to do it. People just drive around instead of through. Cutting off waterfronts, and then they become decrepit neighborhoods and destroyed. And that song, there's a Talking Heads song called Nothing But Flowers. Do you know that song? Every time I hear it since I read this book, it sounds different. Because it's all about, like, used to be a shopping mall, now it's nothing but flowers. So his examinations are about changes in infrastructure and lifestyle changes and neighborhoods and how they're affected by it, and seeing how that has changed again now with gentrification happening in certain areas. Bicycling is less marginalized. People are, you know, putting bike lanes in these neighborhoods, and you can rent bikes. It was all just, there are so many different levels of interest in me, and this came out just in 2009. So a lot of it is very current.
Him talking about the highways going through and, like, cutting off towns, is like, that, again, this is the Disney nerd in me. It reminded me of Cars, which is basically the premise of the first movie, the only good movie in that franchise, by the way.
yeah, the whole Route 66 being how families traveling in cars and landmarks, and it just falling culturally aside.
Yeah, getting cut off by the highway. And I was just like, I can relate to this because I have seen that movie. And I was like, that's an odd correlation, but I'll take it.
His part about Niagara Falls I thought was really interesting, because I remember, like, my dad and my grandpa, they were always really big into, like, whenever they would go traveling, like, every roadside attraction you had to stop at. We have to check each and every one of these little places out. And my dad grew up in Rochester, so he's talking about it, and he's talking about Buffalo, okay. And I'm like, oh, okay, so, like, and he's talking about, like, this cute little, like, mini waterfall in Rochester, and I'm like, I need to ask my dad about that and see if he remembers anything like that, because it's just, like, oh, it's a different way of looking at stuff. It's also, depending on where you are in the book, not the best book to read right before bed. Because you'll either, like, fall asleep midway through, or you'll get overly engaged and have to finish the chapter to get to the next part. And I'm like, okay.
Momentum of it is not consistent.
Yeah, so it's like, I couldn't really gauge that. So I'm like, I put it on my night shelf for a while, and then I'm like, today I like was just going through, and I'm like, oh, audio version. Okay, yes, let's see how much we can get through today at work. And it actually works very well as an audiobook. I do recommend.
I can see why, because like Linda said before, it's not exactly stream of consciousness, but it is kind of recalling stories from memory. So yeah, I can see where that would work well.
Like a podcast. Like,
it's like listening to a friend of yours talking about going to this place. And then, like, a tangent will happen, but it's a very cool tangent.
Yeah, that's a little nifty, like, his observation and then some kind of relevant story to it. And like I said, the momentum isn't consistent. Because sometimes it's like it's reading, like, a textbook lesson about the history of something, and then all of a sudden, there's this really cool story about some shit going down. And then something you recognize. Like, it was a really good start for me. Absolutely. I mean, I picked up this book because I was about to meet him. and manage this event. And for listeners who don't know and haven't heard that before, and I should have wore the t-shirt or put the poster behind me. Back during, actually, it was right after the book came out, that election cycle, I organized a ride to the polls, and David Byrne took part in it. I was working for, I was the state director for the Voter Information Project at the time, and it was kind of an offshoot of Rural Votes, and he had contacted Rural Votes to try and help with getting people registered, getting people to vote, and just what can I do? And directors from a few different states put their ideas in, and of course most people was like, he should come do a concert at the college, being art rock and such. And I tapped a friend of mine who's a local DJ, and my friend Sam Spencer, who's a well-known politician, or political activist, I guess, be a better term, because they're huge fans, and they told me about this cycling thing, and I was like, ooh, we have early voting, and we could do a ride, and then friends put me in touch with local Charlotte city councilmen who could help with that, one who was a cyclist with a local bike shop, and people who organize rides, so we could propose the plan with, like, this would be our route. And David was kind of like all over that, like, oh my god, and different. So we did that. I had Big Mama D, who's been on the show, sing the national anthem at this punk ass coffee house I like, and we started the ride there, and then got volunteers, set up water stations. The local bike shop lent him a bike, and they have taps there, and they were a water station. And we just went place to place, and people would jump off their bikes and go vote, or people would join up at that place and keep going. So it was very cool. It was I think it was a successful event. I ended up with like a week and a half to throw it together, and it got over fucking 200 people.
Excellent. That's on this awesome.
So, and David was really interesting and to work with. And I'm glad I have experience with working with certain types of people to like, just go, okay, I know exactly, he has a list and he needs his list. And I know how that works. it'll keep him from on hit task and getting distracted. And then I hooked him up with some other groups, 'cause he wanted to do something even more hands-on. He was he's not this big ego performer, regardless of his decades of fame. I will say that was neat. There was someone who wanted to play his music for the ride, and he was just like, no, that's not very comfortable. If you want to play music, that's fine. But so like not that kind of pretentious. And then he wanted to do something more hands-on, and I hooked him up with a local urban voting rights group, and he did a few things. He made phone calls, he knocked on doors, and he stood out handing out. He was insisting on being completely nonpartisan, but voter information stuff in the line at the final polling place for the ride that day. So that was pretty cool. And then when I saw him in concert a year or so later, he was like prompting people to register to vote at the end of his show. And I'm like, oh good, he's still doing the thing. But his political activism was very like him caring about the community. He lives in New York City. He travels the world. He bicycles all the time. There's a little bit of tips in the back of the book for what kind of, he's like, this isn't a consumer report. I haven't tried everything, but here's what I've used. Here are the issues I had and a few recommendations, which is pretty nifty.
Yeah, I think Amber and I had been looking at some of the reviews of the book just 'cause, and like there's people that are angry that it's not a book about what bicycles to ride. And I was like, guys, you're missing the point. It's not the point of this book.
Boring really? For me.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Oh, it's only tangentially about bicycling. It's by a art rock musician. Did you really just think he wrote about bicycles?
So this 10-speed Yamaha is a little low. I mean, what do you expect?
The gear shift is sticky.
I don't know. I just... Those types of reviews, I'm like... I just kind of look kind of sideways at them, like, really?
Yeah, I have to say, I really disagree with some of these reviews hard. Like, who thought it would be so boring? Saying the insights are superficial, as one reviewer said, is outrageous to me. Like, did you read the same book? I mean, he dives into the cultural anthropological origins of transportation and status with different types of it in the countries he's in and how it's affected different communities. And, oh yeah, it's just really superficial insight. What are you talking about?
I got through the American cities. Like I said, I finished Istanbul and I was about to start Buenos Aires when I ran out of time and on the audio, and I'd skipped around previously to some of the others, but like the insight about like white flight and like used to be to live in the city and that was the good thing. And then like, no, we're going to do the white flight. We're going to leave. He talks about growing up in Baltimore and just like everybody abandoning the city and the car becomes like the main way to get around now. Mm-hmm. So everything has to be developed for the car, and it just encourages the no more cute little knick-knack places to stop on the highway because you have to just keep going on the highway till you reach your destination.
Yeah.
There's no more, like, leisure roads. Walking or especially biking in some cities is just...
Geez. Yeah, no, as someone who grew up in Atlanta, it's 20 minutes to get anywhere by car.
Mm-hmm.
On a good day.
Yeah. Yeah, and I am guilty. Whenever I've had to drive through Atlanta, I don't go through... I use the going around Atlanta routes because it's the only hope of getting there to the other side in the same day. Oh, yeah. And I tangented myself...
You're not wrong.
...into talking. Oh, yeah. When I've had to drive through there, I plan for, like, not hitting it certain times a day. I tangented myself talking about the event organization, but when I picked up the book and started reading it, I'm from Buffalo, and it's like the first city he mentions, and I was a little disappointed because he just biked to Niagara Falls and then kind of wrote a lot about Niagara Falls, and then the piece after that being about Rochester, and I am familiar with Rochester. I used to work in Niagara Falls, because I lived in Lockport growing up, and that was like... Buffalo, Niagara, and Lockport are kind of a triangle that there's like an equilateral triangle with 25-mile long lines. And so it's like Lockport is kind of a suburb of both. And so, yeah, it's when we go to Niagara Falls, I grew up with it not even as much as a landmark as you would just go to the falls and you could wander around. And the American side has had the Winter Garden, and they would dress it up at Christmas time, and that's about it. Other than that, it was a very rust belt, decrepit city full of garbage. If you wanted to go there for fun and landmarky things and a pleasant experience, you just go to the Canadian side, because they have Clifton Hill, where there's wax museums and restaurants and shops and... the parks next to the falls are much better taken care of and things.
About the time that people stopped, you know, going over the falls in barrels is when the U.S. stopped caring about it. Just saying.
Yeah. Like others.
Which is a shame.
Yeah.
It's a shame because Niagara Falls is very pretty. I've never been there in person, but I've seen photographs and...
it's an emotional experience. It's such a, like... My sister couldn't go very close. Like, she felt drawn to jump in. Like, there's this weird power of that water just moving over, and you know it's like super fast, but it looks slow. Mm-hmm. It's a strange draw. I understand it. Some people are very uncomfortable.
I would love to go, even though I hate being cold. I think I would love to go in winter and see it frozen.
That is a fantastic sight. And for the Horseshoe Falls on the Canadian side, they light it up. They do it different times of year, but when it's frozen and it's just like giant icebergs and it's lit with these floodlights in different colors, is spectacular sight.
That's probably on my bucket list, if nothing else.
Yeah, it's really cool. But I was so familiar with that route, like driving between Buffalo and Niagara Falls is a prime example to start that book with, of communities that used to thrive and now it's just like crappy little broken down plazas here and there type situation. And it's interesting that you talked about downtown and some of the places there stopping for a sausage sandwich, and how there's like this little leftover bit of Italian immigrant community there, and I was like, I know exactly the neighborhood he's talking about. It's like, I had a boyfriend that lived a few blocks from there, and that's where we'd go hang out. So, but his observations about different countries and transportation were super interesting to me. There were a couple of different ones I should have taken notes. There was one I wanted to talk about that I can't remember now. But Europe being more curated in general.
Oh, yeah.
And how Americans, and he imagines it's very the same in Russia, the way we develop, we have this, like there will always be more land.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of hodgepodgey.
Well, like, you know, having been in England, I was there for study abroad. It's so much, like, there's so much history packed into a very small space, and you can get almost anywhere either by public transit or by walking. You don't need a car, really. Not unless you're going way out. And even if you're going way out, there's trains and there's buses that'll take you. And I don't want to say culture shock, but it was almost culture shock, because I was like, oh, this is neat. Why don't we have this where I live?
Yeah, I wish, I'd love for him to return to Buffalo and him to write more about that. I'd like his insights on that, because Buffalo is one of those cities, like his descriptions of the overpasses cutting over the waterfront and cutting everything off happened there and killed the waterfront, which is part of the reason it was settled in the first place, like the canal hitting the lake. And why people settle in certain areas. I'm a cultural anthropology nerd. Like, the book grabbed me from the beginning because of that kind of thing. And Buffalo has very, very recently actually started to do something completely different and revitalize the waterfront so people would go there.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, yeah. I mean, there's
stuff like bike paths are happening.
There are reasons why communities grew up around certain areas. You know, either it was the river, because back in the day they needed it for, you know, food and transportation and water and everything that they needed right there, you know, as
well. And like trains, I think.
Trains
were
trains,
the beginning of.
Yeah, trains changed everything. Trains changed everything. But, you know, it's the same kind of, and, you know, anthropology is, you know, really fun that way, because it's like, well, why is there a town here? And then you look into their history, it's like, oh, there used to be a mine or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, towns don't, generally, there are exceptions, but towns don't just spring up for no reason.
Yeah. There's some really great observations about New Orleans, which I still have never visited. It's kind of a bucket listy thing for me.
Oh, and definitely. That's one of the few places I have been to, and It was pre-Katrina. Like, literally, we got out as Katrina was coming in. It was kind of terrifying.
Wow.
Yeah, but we went and it was amazing. Like, whew. I definitely recommend, like, I definitely want to go back. Especially, I want to see what's different. How it looks.
Yeah, my mom used to go regularly, and she wouldn't go for Mardi Gras. She'd go for the jazz festival. Mm-hmm. But more often than not, I would like... I remember when... I think the last time she had gone before Katrina, she took my sister and I watched over our grandmother, who was staying with us at the time. And I was always going to get to go. I have a cute little plaque about how I was going to save the world, but I had kids that she brought me from there. And then I didn't get to go. When Katrina happened, I want to go. I still want to go. I mean, and see the surviving culture and what they've been doing. And I have friends that live there and own property there. I just haven't made the freaking trip. But it's interesting how they held on to their culture, and but then the infrastructure failed them. But yeah, his observations on that are like, yep. I think I pretty much agree with your assessment of how that went. So, yeah.
Interesting. I think we...
You mentioned blog, it being kind of travel blog-like. Apparently, there is a review on Goodreads, and I will put the link in our notes, folks, to the Goodreads stuff. He has a blog, and a lot of it made it into the book. So that makes perfect sense.
That makes sense.
Like, I think it was the publisher came to him and was like, you know, you should do a book and kind of, you could tie all this stuff together with the bicycle thing. Like, the bicycle thing is definitely incidental to telling these stories.
I think we can all recommend this.
I definitely would. I mean, I recommended it to you guys, so...
Yeah.
It's not fun fiction. Well, I mean, it's certainly fun in parts.
But I have enjoyed it. I just have to
finish. Yeah, I'm going to finish it. Like, it has... Like, the audio has replaced Radiolab, so... Good on that, because that's usually my go-to for work is Radiolab.
Oh, podcast. And I can see that. If you like Radiolab, you'd probably like this book. Oh, yeah. Because it is smart. It's very, very smart. There's a lot to learn from it. And seeing if someone's under... Yeah, and if you're a fan, if you were an Anthony Cordain fan and love No Reservations, it's kind of a book like that show.
Strangely enough, because I like lore and I like, you know, stories and hearing the history of places, there are parts of it that remind me of lore, where he's talking about a historical place and then he goes into a story. It's not like, it's not a historical story, but it's his history. And so
I can see that. Because he'll often describe the setting,
mm-hmm.
you know, whether it's someone's home or the neighborhood, and then launch into the stories and the history around it in that way.
Yeah, so.
Yay! I will actually add the Goodreads, my own review at some point, and give it some stars. Counteract these people who just, I don't, should have bought, should have read the manual that came with their bike, apparently.
I guess.
That being said, some of the graphics are kind of interesting in the back, too. Like, just, like, random bike rack designs.
Well, yeah, because those exist. He designed those bike racks, and they exist in New York City.
The Wall Street one is kind of my favorite. That's appropriate.
Right? And the hipster looks like a guitar.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, the MoMA... there's one earlier, like, it's not in that appendix, where is it, that I found interesting, too, and I don't know if it's earlier, because the old, with an E, Times Square, and it's, like, a reclining woman, like,
when oh, yeah. That's 70 a cool Times book, Square.
Right? Like, the way, this is how it was, just so you don't forget. So
it's a very different thing when I went in the 2000s.
Yeah. Now it's all digital, right? Yeah. So, Grills, what are you anticipating coming up this week?
For me, I am running my D&D card captor game on Wednesday, so they have to deal with an intellect devourer. A weird intellect devourer, so that's going to be fun. It's really funny, because one of the characters is like this, he's playing this wizard, and he's like, I don't want to touch it, it's going to eat me! And I was like, actually, you don't want to send the dumbest person to go up against an intellect devourer. You want the opposite of that. You need the smartest person. But he's being all like, like in character, he's like, don't let it touch me! I'm just like, oh boy.
That's so, fine.
That'll be entertaining.
How about you, Ray?
So I've got some ideas to do some more hoodie fan art, as I'm just going to call it right now. Eventually I'll get them all put on my Instagram. I'm being very fussy about them right now. And then get them back into a daily Beat Saber workout. I did like 3 out of 5 out of 7 days last week, so we're gonna try and up that and be a bit more consistent.
Cool. Are you going to draw a some sort of stylized bicycle for the show?
I can do that.
Or we can have a picture. We can have a picture of Mr. I Man here.
The Beholder. Yeah.
You can send me a picture Beholder of that. On a bike.
That'll confuse people. Beholder on a bike.
I can do this. Bike. It's going to be a unicycle, but I can do this.
Beholder on a unicycle, even better.
Really confuse him.
I like the alliteration of bike. But, yeah, unicycle probably easier to draw. I mean, it doesn't have hands.
Yeah, because I'm like, he doesn't have hands, so what is he going to do?
It's only one set of pedals.
Use his eyes.
It's all telekinetic.
Yeah.
And suddenly it's parasite, like it's eyeball on the hand thing.
God.
So yeah, I plan to do more wood burning and staining. I have a few ideas. I do want to, before I launch into Ake Willow, because this was super hard. I can't believe I even did this while freehand. As much as I want to make a really nice one using the carbon, I have some other ideas. I want to do something more. Some more simple things. I have friends with birthdays coming up, and I'm thinking about doing some constellation wood burning on little boxes or astrological symbols.
If you could get like their birthday chart, you could do their main signs on like a little box, maybe a jewelry box or something.
Yeah, I've got these little wooden boxes, and so yeah, I will be customizing some of those for my friends with upcoming birthdays. The other idea I had is Rob made this really cool tray, like a handled tray, wooden tray. And right now we have all the succulents on it because we take them out when it's a sunny day. We let them have some sun outside and then it's easy to bring them all in. But I also I want another one in general because this is a perfect like breakfast and bed delivering tray. And I want to hand burn a Ouija board.
Oh. Playing with fire there. Playing with fire there, dear.
Playing with fire, literally. But like, I could do a Ouija board and like hand
burn. I don't trust Ouija boards. I don't trust Ouija boards. Even ones that you make yourself. I don't trust them.
Well, I was thinking of other decor items to make. And I'm thinking about putting up some kind of e-commerce for, like we did those coffin-shaped shelves that are really nifty, and coffin-shaped brush holders, like cosmetic items.
I've been looking into different sites besides Etsy that I could possibly put a sign up for. There's apparently an Amazon homemade, like, section where you can put stuff you make on Amazon as long as it's all homemade. So I'm looking into that.
Cool. I will look at that. And I wonder if I have Prime, if it might subvert any fees they try to impose. But yeah, thanks. I'll totally look into that. I was trying to think of other projects to do, and I was like, oh, I can make Ouija boards, and like I know people who would use them as wall hangings, and then I thought of, like, I want a tray. And I have a friend. I was like, if I get it done by Christmas, that's going to be her favorite thing in the world if I make her a tray that looks like a Ouija board. So, yeah. More wood burning, more of the staining, because we tried a bunch of different colors. Rob made a rainbowy effect with it. We have gone full unicorn spit on the cheap, just using my, turns out I had a giant collection of acrylic paint I didn't know I had. mask order, I just got the text as we were starting the show. Somebody got fabric. I do want to mention, for anybody who, uses fabrics, and don't give me shit about using spoon flour. There's some hate out there, but I don't know what it is, and I don't want to know, because spoon flour is like, they have all the novelty fabrics. If you can't find it, you can find it there. And
I haven't heard anything about spoon flour that's bad.
I saw Amy Frost saying don't recommend them to me for something she was looking for, and I was like, uh-oh, don't tell me. But the person I'm making the mask for wanted optical fabric, I guess glasses all over it. And then, yeah, that's what it is. They dropped it off and she couldn't find it. And I sent her to spoon flour. And you know how, what a salvage edge is, right? It's like that.
Yeah.
It's over an inch. It's like an inch and a quarter salvage edge on the spoon flour fabric.
That's real big.
It's real big. It's kind of a lot of waste. I mean, it's doable. I'm still going to get, I just did measuring. I'll get like 20 masks fronts out of a yard. So, I mean, that's decent and their prices are good, but like, don't be, I was shocked. I opened it up. I was like, why is there a big white stripe on it? Did they screw up the print? Like, holy shit. No, that's the salvage edge. Yeah, so that's it. Wood burning, staining, masks, setting up a shop. Hopefully. Oh, and Heresy and Hearsay, tomorrow we will be talking about bearing false witness in politics. No way.
No way.
So remember, folks, you can always watch us record live at twitch.tv/geekgrills most Monday evenings. Our next one will be October 17th, 2020 at 5 p.m. Pacific Time, 8 p.m. Eastern. We will be talking about Transformers War for Cybertron Siege, hosted by Linda.
Get ready, guys. It's going to get nerdy. I pushed my glasses up.
All right. And in addition to the subs and bits we get on Twitch, we are supported by our amazing patrons, and you are the greatest girlfriends on the internet. You can become a patron, please, 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 at www.patreon.com/grills. And don't forget, if you have Amazon Prime, you can sub to us for free every month on Twitch.
And another way to show your support is by leaving us a review. You can do so on any of your podcast catchers. Leaving a review is free, and they help our ranking, which helps other people find our podcast. And you can also join our Facebook page and follow us on Twitter if you'd like to help spread the word.
So where can we find you, Grills, on the interwebs?
You can find me on Twitch and on Instagram under the name madcap_misc. That's M-I-S-C as in miscellaneous.
You can find me on Instagram under dappledame and Twitch as Ray Ino.
And I can be reached at 9of12, that's N-I-N-E-O-F-1-2 on Twitter and Twitch. And you can hear me on the Heresy and Hearsay podcast. Thanks for listening, everyone. Good game!
Good game.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.